Welcome to Awesome Movie Year, the podcast where we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year. My name is Josh Bell, film critic and writer, and I am joined by my co-host.
I'm Jason Harris, filmmaker, comedian, and Joshua, oh Joshua, put on your galoshua, but first we have a show to do. Yes, Joshua, oh Joshua, in the water, splish splashua, but now I throw it back to you.
Wow, that is impressive. I have to say that you wrote a little song for yourself to sing.
For you.
For me. And in a pretty good approximation of the 1930s film style of singing, I think. So way to go, Jason.
Thank you. I mean, Joshua's not the easiest thing to rhyme either, you know. So I really tried to capture Lydia the tattooed lady as Joshua, the guy who sits on the couch.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be a staple as much as Lydia the Tattooed Lady. But that is a major part of the movie that we're talking about here. We are at the season finale of our season on the films of 1939. And as always in our finale, we offer up an audience choice poll, come up with kind of a theme, and give our audience a few choices for films that they might want to hear about. And in this season, we were looking at movies from some of the iconic comedy stars of this era. We offered up Laurel and Hardy in The Flying Deuces, W.C. Fields in You Can't Cheat an Honest Man, and the overwhelming choice was the Marx Brothers in At the Circus. Really, more overwhelmingly even than I think I expected. I know people love the Marx Brothers, but I felt like these are all pretty well-known, even now, comedy stars. And this isn't necessarily the most famous Marx Brothers movie, but one person did not vote for the Marx Brothers. Everyone else, I believe it was unanimous in our poll on Facebook in the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group, and we had one Twitter vote for the Laurel and Hardy film, and that was it.
No love for W.C. Fields.
So. Not mm-hmm. at all.
So. You know what his gravestone says?
What does it say?
It's better than being in Philadelphia. I think that's what it says, yeah.
That is good.
Yeah, so, I mean, hey, I'm happy to do the Marx Brothers, but the audience, you know, they just think that Laurel and Hardy and W.C. Fields are a bunch of bums, apparently.
I guess so. Mm. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I am not super crazy in terms of what I've seen about any of these performers. I can, I think, appreciate, hopefully, their importance to the history of film comedy, but none of them really do it for me in terms of actually enjoying or laughing at their work.
What is your favorite comedy, Josh?
My favorite comedy of all time?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably Heathers, which is my favorite movie of all time.
Heathers is very good.
Done an episode on. So, yeah, and I like a lot of comedy from this era, as, you know, we had a vehement disagreement over on my pick of the women. But
oh, I thought you said comedy.
I mean, I know you didn't like it, but it is a comedy. And that's a movie that I laughed thoroughly throughout watching. And I think maybe that kind of dialogue-driven repartee is more the comedy that I prefer rather than the sort of slapsticky physical comedy. Although W.C. Fields is very dialogue-based, and it's just, I don't know. I've only seen one of his films, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, well, I got to push back on that, Josh, because half of the Marx Brothers' entire act is those really clever kind of wordplay interfaces. So I think there's plenty of great dialogue comedy in here, and you're just not giving it its due because they're the Marx Brothers, not the Marx Sisters.
Well, there is, not to say that I enjoyed the female performances in this film either, to be honest, but no, you're right. You're right. I mean, Harpo, of course, as the silent Marx Brother, his comedy is all physical, but the other two, Groucho and Chico, they are doing a lot of that back and forth, especially Groucho. And I think that's the most likely that I'm to find funny. And prior to watching this, I had seen a couple Marx Brothers movies a while ago, also classics, Duck Soup and Horse Feathers. And I remember kind of enjoying those. And maybe I enjoyed them more. Maybe they had wittier banter than this film did. But for whatever reason, this just did not do it for me at all.
Whittier, oh, Whittier, where is old Lydia? Lydia, the Whittier lady.
You're really, you know, usually when Jason sings, I try to stop it immediately, but you've really found your niche as a singer in this old timey style, I feel like.
Oh man, finally, I can take the act on the road.
You can. Mm-hmm. You can be a vaudeville star.
Like the Marx Brothers, right? So, yeah. You know, I'll have to... My brother can manage me, but I'll have to find four other brothers to play along with, or three other brothers. So
see where you can dig those up.
Yeah. So Josh, I rewatched Duck Soup and Horse Feathers, both of which I had seen. I really do like Horse Feathers. And then I know you and I both watched A Night at the Opera, which many consider either Duck Soup or A Night at the Opera the best Marx Brothers movies. I really liked A Night at the Opera. I thought it encapsulated everything that they all do very well, but I know I'm fighting an uphill battle against you Stooges today. So.
Well, the Stooges are another classic comedy team that I don't particularly care for, but I did watch A Night at the Opera, and I liked it more than this, but I overall was not particularly keen on it. And again, I saw Horse Feathers and Duck Soup so long ago that I don't remember much about them. And if I had time to revisit them, I might have enjoyed them more. Those are from the Paramount era of the Marx Brothers, where I believe they were known for being a bit more freewheeling, a bit more anarchic. And when they moved over to MGM, which is where they made At the Circus as well as A Night at the Opera, there was a bigger focus on musical numbers. Of course, that was something that MGM was known for. And these subplots, which was one of the worst aspects of both of those films, featuring... these kind of boring straight man and straight women characters, where they have this kind of drippy romance and they have their own whole plots and their own musical numbers. And it really, to me, drags down both of these
movies. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, especially in this one, the guy who runs the circus and his girlfriend really don't add much at all. So, you know, but there are those characteristics you do see in all of the movies, like those musical numbers. There's great Groucho Marx musical numbers in Horse Feathers and in also Duck Soup. I mean, obviously, Harpo gets a harp solo in most of them. He didn't get it in this one here. And then obviously Chico is going to have a great name like Fiorelli or some other Italian name. And he's very good. Chico, I think, is underrated in the way he, you know, you were talking about how Groucho delivers those like kind of one-liners. And he's famous for that. Chico is really, really good at it. And maybe just is so effortless, he doesn't necessarily get the credit. But that's also because Groucho, you know, carried that on to, you know, his television career and other things, whereas Chico kind of and Harpo stayed in the nightclubs, I think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Groucho is the one I feel like people are familiar with and may not even know necessarily about the other brothers, because he went on to that career and he has such an iconic look and style of comedy, whereas the other two, maybe their styles are a bit more rooted in this specific era versus having their own distinctiveness.
Well, Harpo, I mean, is a great physical comedian, right? You know, you can go back to Chaplin or forward to Mr. Bean and he falls into that kind of style. And I think
he falls into a lot of things.
He does. He sure does. Mm-hmm. And I think he's really good at that physical comedy. You know, he's really, really good. And Chico, you know, I marked down a few lines that with the interchanges, and Chico says something like, "I won't say anything." And Groucho says, "I know, but don't talk either." You know, and it's just like a lot of that funny stuff. But Chico also had a lot of those, you know, kind of puns on words like, you know, did you pay your taxes? Taxes, that's where my mom lives, you know, or whatever.
Right. So. Yeah, he does. He does indeed. So
no, nothing on Zeppo, though, on this
film. No, Zeppo is not in this film. That was the fourth Marx brother who did perform with them in those early films. And he usually kind of played the straight man.
Yeah.
And when they went from Paramount to MGM, he decided to step away. And he and their other brother, Gummo, who was never in any of their films, they both worked as managers for the Marx Brothers and whole, very successfully.
Right. Theatrical agency.
Yes.
Zeppo in Horse Feathers plays Groucho's son.
That is weird.
Yeah.
So speaking of silent comedians, Buster Keaton was an uncredited writer on this film. He was in sort of a career downturn at this time, and it seemed like he was basically hired as sort of like a punch-up writer for various comedies at MGM, and he and the Marxes clashed, which is interesting because we think of them as both these icons of this era of comedy, but maybe they don't mesh well together.
Yeah, I mean, Keaton, you know, obviously a lot of those sight gags, and the Marx Brothers, they do have a lot of sight gags, but there are a lot of much bigger set pieces. Not to say Keaton didn't do big set pieces, but the Marx Brothers was obviously, Keaton did silent films. This was more of a real mix of like fast with the dialogue and the gags.
Right, right. So maybe it didn't quite fit together, but it's interesting to think of them kind of attempting to collaborate. So I didn't find any financial figures for this, unfortunately, but it, I believe, was a success. This was their third film at MGM, and they continued to work on more films at MGM. So this was really at a time when they were quite popular. But because they were so popular and because their earlier films had been so successful, this movie was viewed maybe as a bit of a disappointment quality-wise from a lot of critics. Reaction was pretty mixed to this. Frank S. Nugent in the New York Times was disappointed. He said, "As a philosophical Marxist who can take the goons or leave them alone, we're inclined to believe that the policy of non-intervention is the one to pursue with At the Circus. For, in all charity and with a very real twinge of regret, we must report that their new frolic is not exactly frolicsome, that it is, in cruel fact, a rather dispirited imitation of former Marx successes, a matter more of perspiration than inspiration, and not at all up to the Marx standards, foot high though they may be, of daffy comedy. If you happen to have missed A Night at the Opera, Coconuts, and the other Marx shows, any of these skits may seem comic in a purely lunatic way. If not, the strained laughter they evoke will have a commemorative quality as a tribute to things long dead and still unburied."
I think that's fair in that a lot of this is lesser versions of better things we've seen from them, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I really like the big finale, but I don't think it compares to, I mean, they always have big finales, the Marx Brothers, right? Duck Soup, There's a War, there's a big football game in Horse Feathers. A Night at the Opera is amazing, where Harpo's like kind of swinging from the cable to cable in the opera. So, and this one is a nice trapeze act, and it was, I thought, pretty good, but I mean, I just don't know if it stands up to the best of them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, for a movie called At the Circus, there's not that much circus in this movie, and I kind of would have loved to see more of a showcase of the circus acts.
I agree with you. Imagine like Nightmare Alley with, you know, the Marx Brothers. But the weakest point of this movie is when they get away from all the circus stuff and the Marx Brothers split up, right? You know, to go on their little side quests, which is kind of the second half of Act Two. So once we get away from that, it's not until we get back into the circus where things get heated up again.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, even as someone who hasn't seen a ton of Marx Brothers movies, I think you can see that maybe they're running on fumes a bit here or trying to recapture something that's not quite working.
I would wonder, you know, which ones after this, like, were there any after this that kind of hit the mark a little better?
Hit the marks a little better.
Yeah.
I mean, I think A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races, which like immediately preceded this, are sort of the peak, it seems like. And then there's a decline into these later films is what it appears. But I have not seen any of the ones that follow this one.
Right. And they were also, you know, they retired and came back and did all those things. So, you know, it's hard, buddy.
Yeah. So Richard L. Coe in the Washington Post was more positive about this. He said, "The brothers Marx are in the tippiest top form in their new film. To all true Marxists, this should be recommendation aplenty. At the Circus is constructed on the most successful Marx formula. Earth's dizziest gagsters romp through an unbelievable tale, and a pleasant young couple sing their way to romance. Besides all the rapid-fire lines, which it would not be fair to tell, even if we could remember them, the film is further blessed with specialties from the trio." And then he goes on to describe the tattooed lady song and Harpo's harping and et cetera. So I feel like he's being very generous here to the pleasant young couple, as he calls them.
The movies that came after this, Josh, were Go West, The Big Store, and A Night in Casablanca, and Love Happy. Love Happy. I didn't even know that was, is that even a Marx Brothers movie? So I don't, yeah, I guess that's their last one with Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yes, yes. That's the final film that they made together.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, whatever you think of them, like I said, Harpo is an amazing physical performer and an amazing musician. I mean, you know, we see him and Chico in different movies. They play the piano. They're really good, you know, and Groucho is a singular character that endures in pop culture.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that is something like we talked about in reference to Dave's beloved Ritz brothers in the Gorilla episode, mm-hmm. is that even if I wasn't crazy about these films, you can tell that the Marxes have these very distinct personas that they've honed and they're immediately memorable. And that was something that the Ritz brothers lacked, I think.
Dave preferred the Gorilla and the Gorilla, but I think the Gorilla in this one was better, and certainly the Seal in this one.
Yeah, well, the Gorilla costume in this film is much more convincing than the costume in the Gorilla.
Well, you know the backstory on it. I watched Groucho on Dick Cavett on YouTube, and he's apparently was a story he liked to tell. There was one performer who really was kind of had the Gorilla skin, right, and got a lot of work doing that. But he was so hot in it, he cut holes in it or something, and then they couldn't use it. So then they got a much smaller, like orangutan skin. And if you watch the movie from the beginning to the end, the gorilla gets much smaller on the way through.
I did not notice that at all. But I definitely did feel like the costume looked more gorilla-like. The gorilla costume in the Gorilla is not at all convincing.
Yeah, so the gorilla is Charles Jamora, who was known as the King of the Gorilla Men, got a lot of work doing that. And then afterwards moved into like in the 50s doing like aliens and stuff like that. He was like Andy Serkis pre-Andy Serkis.
Yeah, really found his niche. That's nice. Good. So critic wise, finally, John Mosher in The New Yorker was not into this one at all. He said, "That annual hour we put aside for reflection upon the prowess of the Marx Brothers used to be a happier affair than it has been for the last couple of years. One can yearn a little now, considering room service and the current at the circus, for the old glory and resilience these Marxes once displayed. They have pulled themselves together somewhat for At the Circus, taking the trouble to revive some of their old tricks and scurrying around with a semblance of kindly effort. But the achievement of novelty or surprise, the true Marx note, is never apparent. They may feel that they've already given their message to the world and that the world had best be grateful for what it's got."
Right. So this is where we're at with the idea of like, are they doing these movies because they really want to do them? Are they contractually obligated? Chico was a notorious gambler who had a lot of debts to pay. So yeah, there's a lot of backstory leading to this circus affair, Josh.
Right, right. I mean, you know, it seems like later, much later, you know, 10 years or so later, at the end of their career together, they were maybe more in the position of doing these movies just to pay Chico's debts. But here, it seems like I didn't necessarily get the impression that they were not putting their full effort in. It's just that maybe they've exhausted their creativity. But they're trying, I think.
Well, like you said, A Night at the Opera was 1935. 37 was A Day at the Races. Room Service, which I don't think any of us have seen.
No.
That came out in 38 and this was 39. But yeah, I think what it is like the formula is there by this point, obviously, right? We know what they're all going to do. We know Groucho's going to try to ingratiate himself to a rich lady, you know, and there's going to be all these misdirects and Chico and Harpo are going to have to hide somewhere. And of course, you mentioned the musical numbers, which I'm glad are in every movie. There's really memorable ones in every one. But this, I think, is just like they took a formula and it didn't work as well. The original title was A Day at the Circus. So it was kind of supposed to be in that A Night at the Opera, A Day at the Races, like kind of trilogy type thing. But yeah, definitely not the strongest Marx Brothers movie. I would agree with you guys on that.
Right, right. And the other element of their formula that we should mention is the presence of Margaret Dumont, who plays the widow that Groucho romances here. And she was in 7 Marx Brothers movies. This was the 6th of the 7 movies that she made with them and is essential to their comedy. And in fact, later in that New Yorker review, after he disses the Marx Brothers, Mosher goes on to say that Margaret Dumont has like not lost any of her luster and she's just as good as she's always been. So
yeah, I think she either won or got a nod from the Screen Actors. She won the Best Screen Actor Supporting Actress Award for this one from the SAG Guild. 7 Marx Brothers movies, worked with both W.C. Fields and Laurel and Hardy. And Groucho said she was a great straight woman who never understood the jokes, but I think he was just saying that as a joke.
Right. Too. That was a joke. Yes. but she definitely did exactly what she needed to do to support their comedy.
Well, she's the classic archetype. Oh dear. How could you? You
know? Yeah. That's basically every performance of hers.
Right. But she's the person. Right.
Yes.
Almost created that.
Yeah, she did. She did. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think you look back this far and you realize that she's creating this character that has been then imitated in so many other ways. So, Jason, I mean, both of us, we kind of dove into the Marx Brothers here, but how familiar were you with the Marx Brothers before this?
I mean, like I said, I rewatched Duck Soup and also Horse Feathers. I think I had probably seen A Day at the Races a long time ago. I'm not sure if I remember that. So it was good to see A Night at the Opera and see this one. But I mean, you know, I was not aware that Lydia the Tattooed Lady was Groucho's signature song. So it was fun researching that and to see how many other places it's been used. But they're just kind of like synonymous with comedy and pop culture and, you know, obviously the early or mid 20th century. But, you know, their legacy endures. Everyone knows who they are. Their influence is huge. So familiar, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I had also seen Duck Soup and Horse Feathers 10, 15-ish years ago or something. My sister, Brandy, is a big Marx Brothers fan, and I believe I watched both of those with her. And I thought I remembered liking them, not as much as she did, but finding them amusing. But I would be curious to revisit those, because the ones I watched this time, this and A Night at the Opera, really did not do it for me. But a lot of classic comedy, like I said, I've seen some Laurel and Hardy, including The Flying Deuces, which was our potential choice, which I didn't care for. And Abbott and Costello with The Three Stooges, W.C. Fields, Mae West. All of those just don't do it for me for whatever reason. So,
but the women, hilarious.
Well, Mae West, yeah, the women is, and lots of other like screwball comedies or kind of witty, quick, repartee stuff from the 30s and 40s I love and find hilarious. But a lot of these big comedy icons just, I don't know, their personalities, it feels like they're so personality driven, and it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So. I think, I don't know, like I said, there's so many elements to this formula and there are so many quick lines in there that, you know, I like it, but right. Yeah. This is, I think less so on this one and more so on The Night at the Opera. If you didn't dig that, then they're probably not for you.
Right. I mean, and obviously I am in the minority on these, and certainly our audience were big proponents of the Marx Brothers. Dave, I know you prefer the Ritz Brothers, but had you seen some Marx Brothers movies before this?
I'm sure I had as a kid, but I can't really remember which ones. So for this, I also watched Animal Crackers and Duck Soup. And each one I felt got progressively better as I watched them. Maybe I was kind of like getting into their speed or whatever. My main thing was I don't really like Groucho's personality. Like, it's kind of grating. I really like the other two. I think they're both really funny, and Groucho just kind of bugs me.
I mean, Groucho is definitely, his personality is meant to be sort of abrasive, or, you know, he's a bit in your face and he's kind of barreling over people. But I feel like this is why I wonder if maybe those earlier films, I liked them more, because when they went to MGM, they were softened a bit. And when it was just completely almost like mean-spirited, I wonder if that, I found that more amusing. But I'd have to go back and watch those again.
Of course, Dave has some type of Groucho Harpo mix of hair today, so I'm surprised that he doesn't like that. But I'm glad you watched some others that you liked more, because I know you didn't like this one.
So anything else you want to mention on the background of this film, Jason?
Joshua, oh Joshua, in the pit you will Mashua, but first we still have the show to do. So Joshua, Joshua, later you can get yourself a Nashua, but first let's come back with act number two.
Welcome back to Awesome Movie Year in this season finale of our season on the films of 1939. We are talking about the audience choice pick, the Marx Brothers in At the Circus. And Jason has been singing us in and out. Did you have an intro song for this segment that I cut off, Jason? Did you have something else to sing here?
I was going to maybe sing a real nice love song between the male and female lead that really don't add at all to this film.
Yeah, let's leave that out. I think they do it. They sing it twice, I think, right? Their little song. They sing it in the little diner when they decide to get married, and then they sing it again later, I think.
It's weird because, you know, you think of like these big comedic numbers and then like this kind of sweet love song. It's a tough balance to find, but I do agree with the criticism. I mean, look, more Marx Brothers, less everybody else would have been helpful here. Every time they're in a scene, it's better than when other people are in the scenes.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you don't necessarily just want the Marx Brothers on their own. I mean, I feel like they do need the straight man, whether it's Margaret Dumont or the couple or whoever. But I think the scenes without any of the Marxes are certainly the worst part of this film. And we have a plot. I guess I wasn't exactly sure what the purpose. So we've got the circus, right? And the main couple, the man, he owns the circus, and he's sort of like Jeff. Yes, he's a rich guy, or he comes from a rich family, right? Margaret Dumont is his rich aunt, and he's sort of left his life of privilege because he has a passion for the circus. He's like Jimmy Stewart in the Ice Follies, right? Mm. He's pursuing his passion for the circus by running this circus, but it's not been a huge moneymaker. And so he's borrowed money from a gangster, right? And the gangster wants his $10,000, and Jeff has the $10,000, but the gangster doesn't really want the money because he wants to use the debt to take over the circus for himself. For what reason?
Well, exactly? Maybe he thinks that he could make that money. But Josh, I wanted to, it's funny that you bring this up, but you're right. The gangster wanted the circus, right? But this is what I found interesting. I wrote this down. Groucho's character, Jay Cheever Loophole, right?
The lawyer, yes.
Yes. This was from Wikipedia. Recalls that of real-life financier Jay Cheever Cowden, who had ties to the film industry. In 1936, Cowden led a group of investors who had loaned $750,000 to Carl Lamy and his son, Carl Lemmo Jr., to finance the film Showboat. Before the release of the film, the investors demanded repayment, but the Lammels did not have the funds to pay it. Because of this, Cowden was able to take control of Universal Pictures and served as the company's president until 1946. Showboat was a hit, and had the loan not been called for, that the Lammels would have been able to repay the debt and retain ownership of Universal.
I think it's pronounced Lemley.
Lemley, that's what I meant. I was reading.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But no, I mean, right, that is something that happens. And we talked about this in our Gulliver's Travels episode, right? This is how the Fleischer brothers lost their animation studio, is because they had a loan that was called in early. And even though Gulliver's Travels was a huge box office hit, because of the contract or whatever they signed, it was, I think it was Paramount or whatever the studio was that they worked with, was able to take over their company and push them out. And so it's not that that's not a real thing, but I feel like in the context of this movie, right, this guy is a gangster. And he's not looking to become a circus impresario, right? And furthermore, he's already a criminal. He could just tell Jeff, like, hey, buddy, I own your circus now, and point a gun at him or something. Like, it's a pretty, not that the plot matters, but I felt like the fact that I was distracted by misunderstanding the plot is a problem, because you don't want that. You want to just focus on the comedy.
I think that's fair. I mean, like I said, like, Jeff, when the gangster called in the loan, Jeff had that money ready to go. So the circus had become profitable, right? So whatever the reason was, if he could make more money shutting it down or taking it over and giving it to, you know, Goon A, B, or C to run, right? There's a money-making opportunity for him there,
I guess, right? And then, of course, we have a lot of the sort of driver of the plot, which is the idea that because Jeff actually does have the money, but the gangster doesn't want to be repaid, he has to get his associates to steal the money from Jeff so that Jeff will then say, oh no, I don't have the money, and the gangster can take over the circus. So enter the strong man and the little person, who are in cahoots with the gangster, and they get the money. And then, of course, the Marx Brothers are there to try and retrieve it for Jeff so that he can have a happy end.
Right. So Chico and Harpo are already working for the circus, and they recruit Loophole, Groucho, to kind of come in and, you know, uncover what's going on with this case and find the money.
Right.
You mentioned the little person, that's little Professor Adam, played by Jerry Marin, who we also saw in The Wizard of Oz. He was the last living cast member of that film.
Yeah, I mean, you can, I mean, obviously he's under makeup when he's playing a munchkin, but I felt like his voice sounded familiar to me when he was speaking.
Yeah, so this scene, there's one scene where they think they can trap little Professor Adam, A-T-O-M, by getting one of his cigars to like match it to see if he was in a space or at a place at a specific time. And the scene is Groucho says, you know, hey, I'm going to go in and we're going to talk and I'm going to ask him for a cigar, right? And, you know, the other Marx brothers agree. And then, of course, every time he asks for a cigar, Chico says, I got a cigar for you, right? So he's ruining the bit. But that's kind of, you know, and this goes on a good amount. And it's kind of like we're saying, lesser versions of better bits of that sort, like in A Night at the Opera, when Chico and Harpo are stowaways on the boat in this tiny cabin with Groucho and people keep coming into the room, which is a very famous scene. So, you know, just that kind of repetitive, like build the game, build it, open up. And each time Groucho's got something funny to say about Chico when he keeps ruining it, and Harpo's doing something physical in the room. You know, it's a good version, but not the best version of their bit.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that scene with the cigars was awful. And I think it's a good comparison.
It's an awful version of a known bit is what I was saying.
Right. You know, no, I'm saying that you made a good comparison. And because to me, the difference is like that scene, as you said, in the cabin on the ship in A Night at the Opera is super famous. It may even be the most famous Marx Brothers bit, right? And I didn't love it, but I can see the comedy of it. And to me, what's funny about that is that it escalates, right? You keep getting more people and they show up for different reasons, and Groucho keeps letting them in, and it's funny because it builds. And that cigar scene is just the same joke over and over and over and over again. And as you said, it's the same. Groucho is trying to get a cigar from the little person, and every time he asks for a cigar, Chico is like, oh no, wait, I have a cigar. And he just does that same exact thing. There's no escalation. There's no building, and they just do it over and over and over again until it's exhausted. And to me, that was a key difference there, that even though I didn't love that other scene, I can see why it's famous and why people think it's hilarious. And that cigar scene was just dreadful.
I think that's fair. The other reason that the famous scene, the one, is so famous, and I think the Marx Brothers do this really well in all of their movies, including this one, is they play it at face value. They're not like shining the light on the joke. They're just accepting this as reality. And that really helps build the humor there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think even though they are playing with straight men, as we said, whether that's Margaret Dumont or whoever else, they're playing things straight a lot too. They're not, their characters aren't meant to be like funny men or whatever. Their characters are meant to be taking what they're doing, right, as you said, at face value.
It's situational.
And yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of, like we said, dialogue-driven jokes, but it is situational. Dave, you love animals. Come on, how about a little love for the seal in this one? You might not like the gorilla, but Harpo walking in the rain, holding an umbrella so the seal doesn't get wet, and then the seal giving Harpo the strategy and checkers and obviously getting crushed. Those are funny bits.
I know what you think. Even the seal has got the badge. Yeah. 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 No, the seal is the best part of the movie. The seal's great. That whole scene.
We have a real seal here as opposed to the fake gorilla.
Yes.
You know, seals, I guess, may be easier to train because there was a real seal in the octopus as well. So this era, seals available for films, gorillas not so much, apparently.
I mean, Harpo does a lot of physical animal comedy. Was it this or one of the other ones where he's on a horse? And I mean, it might have been in the finale of Horse Feathers, where he's literally riding the horse down into the end zone in a chariot. And it's funny stuff.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think, but the fact that you're citing that shows that, you know, they're finding like rode a horse. So, what can he do in this movie? Maybe he'll interact with a seal instead or something.
Well,
like
the
that.
Seal is good, but yes, these are, again, we say the blueprint is there. There are some funny lines, you know, I'll have a hot toddy. That's a drink. That's too bad. You know, which is a reference to Thelma Todd, who's in a lot of these movies too. So yeah, it just doesn't hit the same way as some of the other ones do.
Thelma Todd, I believe we mentioned because back in The Gorilla again, Patsy Kelly, who was the maid in The Gorilla, she and Thelma Todd were a known comedy team in the early days of silent films and early sound as well, I believe.
Josh, I thought I wrote this line down because you and I talk about the Hays Code so often. They're doing some type of Peerless Pauline, who is the woman who walks upside down on the ceiling, which is a pretty cool scene. She stuffs the money.
She's the gangster's girlfriend who's in cahoots with him.
Right. She stuffs the money into her cleavage, and Groucho looks into the camera and says, "There must be some way of getting that money without getting in trouble with the Hays office."
That was the only time I laughed in the whole movie. That was my favorite line as well. And I like when Groucho breaks the fourth wall. He does it. I think he does it one or two other times in this film, and he does it in other ones as well. It's not a constant necessarily, and maybe it would get annoying if it were a constant, but I do like when every so often things get so silly or he kind of breaks the tension by saying that. And yes, I enjoyed that, and the way that they're trying to get the bawdiness in there with that whole scene, which is all about Groucho basically, or, you know, Cheever Loophole trying to seduce Peerless Pauline so that he can reach into her shirt and grab the money and prove that the gangster was stealing it.
Right.
Yeah. That's a fun little scene.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, we're going to be looping back and forth here because it's, again, we're talking about sequences that can work, sometimes do work, but most of the time not as well as the better versions of
them. Right, right. Yeah, I mean, and I don't think that I was like laughing uproariously per se during that scene, but I did think that was probably the best scene or the most amusing. And that is something where, I mean, coming up with the lady who walks on the ceiling is a more creative way of saying, like, what kind of new physical comedy bit or set piece can we do that's circus related that is not necessarily a rehash of something that we've done before.
And I think the finale is a good version of that too. You know, we've seen kind of Harpo kind of swinging, like we said, in A Night at the Opera, but I feel like this trapeze act where it involves, "Oh, dear madam," you know, and the gorilla and the Marx Brothers, I thought that was a good, you know, because they really go all in on these act three giant finales and pretty much all the everything I've seen from them, at least. And I thought this one, it definitely held up to those, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a rehash in some ways of that finale from A Night at the Opera with Harpo swinging around on the stage and accidentally putting all the backdrops down. But you're right that they certainly go all out. I mean, we have, right, Groucho travels to, to Newport to try and get money out of Margaret Dumont, who is the aunt of the circus owner. And meanwhile, they bring the circus to her lawn and set the whole circus up right outside her house, which is absurd. So, right, they're really escalating things there toward the end. And that trapeze bit was okay. But I felt like the walking on the ceiling scene was probably better.
Yeah. And one thing I like about Marx Brothers movies, and this might have been a thing at the time, is like when the climax happens, the movie is over, right? You maybe have one wrap-up scene afterwards, but that's it. It's pretty much, hey, this was the big bang and now we're out. And sometimes movies, comedy movies especially, can overextend their welcome after you get that big punch.
Right. I mean, that is definitely something from the time period. There are a lot of movies that end. I mean, sometimes movies end way too abruptly, it seems like, in this era. But I think especially comedies, you're right, where nowadays it seems like it's far more like, oh, we got to make sure all the emotional arcs are wrapped up and the narrative is cleanly finished or whatever. But you forget that it's about the jokes, and those like are lacking there in that finale. And so I think especially for comedies of this era, they do get to that point where it's like, oh, ha, ha, look at what happened. Okay, it's over now. And you don't need more. And so I agree with you on that, definitely.
So, like I said, to me, do you want to talk about this band sequence at all, Josh? Because Harpo is very good as a musician. And then he's got like a kids band backing him at some point. That was when they all separated. And we give Harpo this big musical number. And it's like bunch of black kids in a band and Harpo, right?
Right, right. And then there's a singer who comes out, and I'm not sure who that is. He's, of course, uncredited, as are most of the people in this film. But he has been sort of presented at first as like, it looks like he's sort of the janitor of the circus or whatever. And he gets scared away by the lions, speaking of animals. Mm-hmm. And then Harpo does a bit with the lions. And then the kids show up and they're fascinated by him and they start singing. And then the janitor guy comes back and he's a singer too. And I felt like that must have been a showcase for some particular performer of the time. And I'm looking now here, it's Dudley Dickerson, it looks like, is the guy. He's listed at least on IMDb, even though he's not credited in the film. And it definitely seemed like that was a showcase meant to give him a spotlight in the way that he sings or whatever. And it was kind of, you know, a nice, I didn't love that song necessarily, but it is a nice moment where the Marx Brothers step back and give someone else a spotlight.
Well, and I mean, again, we see how good Harpo is. It just comes out of nowhere, though. Because I haven't seen any of these characters before other than Harpo.
And we never see them again. And right. And yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I think, Dave, you mentioned on Letterboxd, and this is true of even the better Marx Brothers movies, is that it's really basically just a variety show. You can see how it has its origins in something that they would do as vaudeville performers on stage, where it's like, here's a comedy sketch, here's a little song, here's Harpo playing the harp, here's another comedy sketch, and the plot is not important. And so, you know, in a vaudeville show where it was like, hey, now we're going to bring out this guy and his kid chorus and they're going to do a song, you wouldn't wonder, like, why are they there? But in this context of a movie, it's a little more jarring.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, because, like, you know, I watched these three and all three of them, Jason was just bringing up that sequence with the black kids, like all three of them have like a little sequence filled with black people. And I was wondering if that was a thing in a lot of their movies.
I mean, it doesn't come up in A Night at the Opera, which I just watched. And I don't know, Jason, if it's in those other ones.
I don't think it was in Duck Soup.
I might have just randomly picked three where they did that. But I was wondering if it was like a thing of theirs.
Right. Well, I think one of the things, and we, you know, we talked about this like when we covered Gone with the Wind, is that black performers in this era had very, very limited opportunities. Mm-hmm. And for, I, you know, I haven't researched Dudley Dickerson, but it may be that he was a big, you know, nightclub act. But in order to get any kind of screen time in a film, he had to be, you know, second fiddle to the Marx Brothers or whatever. But it does show their generosity that they're saying like, hey, let's give a portion of our film to this other performer and give him a showcase and let people see what he can do.
Yep.
So again, even if I wasn't in love with that sequence, I appreciate that. I did enjoy that song more than the terrible love song, I think.
Well, yeah, we know that's pretty much whenever it's Jeff and his girlfriend on screen, that's when it's time to refill the popcorn, Josh.
Right. I mean, and I think the other thing too, and we can talk about this a little with the legacy, is that it's not like those are some great classic Hollywood musical performers that they got to play those parts. Those are basically just a couple of nobodies who, because maybe they don't want them to upstage the Marx Brothers, who they throw in there, and they're not even necessarily like great at what they do.
I don't know about that, because I don't think, you know, the Marx Brothers are so strong and they have such a particular brand. I don't think you could have upstaged them even if you wanted to. Like, and I'm not saying that, I mean, I think they could have put them anybody in there and they would have held their own. But maybe, you know, to speak to that point, what if they did put in like a Bing Crosby type or someone, you know, who's known as a great singer of the time? That might have been interesting.
Yeah, I think that would have been good. And I think that maybe would have contributed even more to that variety show feel where it's like, hey, look, here we are, here the Marx Brothers are doing what they do really well. And now we have this performer who is someone like Bing Crosby or whatever, who is a great singer, is a great musical performer, and let them do what they do well. But instead we have these kind of second rate performers doing that.
Yeah, because you're not going to show up Harpo. I mean, obviously an amazing musician, and Groucho is singular in his style, right? And he, I think, again, the song that he does in Horse Feathers and Duck Soup and this one, like, you know, they're just, they live on, right? So I don't think that was ever going to be a problem. So I don't know. Maybe it could have also been like, hey, we're throwing another Marx Brothers movies together. All the money has to go to them. So just find some people off the street, right? And we'll pay Margaret Dumano some money too.
Right, right. And it may be the other way around too, where rather than the Marx Brothers not wanting to be upstaged, it may be that someone of the caliber of Bing Crosby doesn't want to play second fiddle to the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, this is an interesting line of thinking. You think about it today, like how that would work and with certain stars and everything. Because I think, you know, if you're good enough at what you do, you don't have to worry about that.
Right. But, you know, there's egos involved, as always, in things like this. And it's not surprising. I have no idea. Right. I haven't looked into that at all. I don't know what the reasoning was. It may very well just be budget, like you were talking about. And these are not necessarily huge budget films, and the Marx Brothers are the draw. So, but either way, the result is that those characters are pretty worthless.
One owns a circus and the other's his girlfriend.
Right. And she sings with a horse, right? Yeah. She has her own musical number where she sings with the horse, and that's also terrible. So, I think we're, do you want to rate this, Jason? Do you have any other observations you want to make? Anything else you particularly liked about this?
No, I think, you know, that we covered it, especially in the broad strokes and everything. So, you know, like I said, Chico at one point is talking about his divorce and he wins custody of his wife's parents 1 month a year. I like how kind of, you know, you were talking about escalating a joke, you know, and then they just play it off as like, yeah, of course that's what happened.
Right. He's doing that because he's trying to get time off. And he's asking Jeff if I can, he's like, can I have a week off at like next August or something? Because he's planning for that. So, yeah, I mean, I can appreciate the ingenuity of some of those jokes, even if they didn't necessarily make me laugh. So how many out of five Marx Brothers, Jason?
I gave it three. I gave it three, which makes sense because Zeppo's not in this one, right?
Mm-hmm. So, right.
So I gave it three because I enjoy so much of them. And you know, even if we're not saying this is the best movie, look up Lydia the Tattooed Lady on YouTube from this sequence. It's really fun.
Yeah. I give it two Marx Brothers out of five. I just didn't enjoy it.
Which one did you cut?
Yeah, I'm gonna cut Harpo maybe. I don't know. Really, I could cut them all but Groucho, but no, I mean, I appreciate, like I said, their influence on comedy. Also, obviously this is not their best work. But it just isn't something that made me laugh. And that's really the purpose of it. So I feel like I can only give it 2 out of 5. Dave, how would you rate this?
I'm also at 2 out of 5. But I'm glad that this was something we covered and I got to watch a few Marx Brothers.
The Groucho Brothers films.
Yeah.
Reminder that Dave gave the Ritz Brothers movie 4.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Which was your favorite of the three that you watched, Dave? Was
it Duck Soup? Yeah.
And what did you rate that?
3.5.
So The Gorilla is better than Duck Soup, one of the revered comedies of all time.
You got it.
And I'm sure I wouldn't have given Duck Soup and Horse Feathers higher ratings from when I watched those. So Jason, did you have another song to lead us to the next segment?
Josh, you're going to have to get Jeff and his girlfriend to do this one because I'm worn out.
All right. We'll come back and talk about the legacy of At the Circus. Welcome back to Awesome Movie Year. In this season finale of our season on the films of 1939, we are talking about the Marx Brothers at the Circus. And Jason, as you noted, they continued working together in films until 1949, when they made Love Happy, which was their final film, which is not well regarded at all. And that, and I whichever one it was that came right before that, both of those were produced after they had intended to retire, but because Chico was a gambling addict and had these debts, Groucho and Harpo agreed to come back and do these two more films in order to sort of help him financially and pay down his debts. And that's really when you get, I would imagine, the sense of contractual obligation in terms of their appearances in the films, but I haven't seen those.
I took this note from Wikipedia. According to a 1947 September article in Newsweek, Groucho, Harpo, Chico, and Zeppo all signed to appear as themselves in a biographical film entitled The Life and Times of the Marx Brothers. In addition to being a nonfiction biography of the Marxes, the film would have featured the brothers reenacting much of their previously unfilmed material from both their vaudeville and Broadway eras. The film, had it been made, would have been the first appearance by the brothers as a quartet since 1933. That would have been cool. And then in 1960, Billy Wilder was going to make a Marx Brothers movie titled A Day at the UN, a comedy of international intrigue set around the United Nations building. I think both of those could have maybe taken this group out on like a higher, you know, deserving kind of send off.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like their last couple of films, A Night in Casablanca from 1946 was the other one that they made solely to help Chico with his debts. And The Big Store in 1941 was meant to be their final film, which was their last MGM film. So yeah, it's a shame that they kind of went out on that, on petering out. But on the other hand, they still did retire long before any of them you know, passed away. And I feel like you have to give a certain measure of respect to that. I mean, we have so many, especially these comedy people who just keep doing their same shtick into their golden years. And it's often kind of sad.
Yeah. So catch me at the Netflix fest just this May.
Jason's not in his golden years yet.
No, but I will be doing my tired, sad shtick there.
Yes. Yes.
No, but Josh, they retired from movies, but they were still, you know, Chico and Harpo were huge nightclub performers. Groucho was as big a television star as there was, right? You bet your life. He was, and you know, on the talk show circuit, besides hosting that, he was like guest number one for everybody. Everyone loves Groucho.
Right. I mean, but I think the difference there is that they were doing those other things, right? They were doing nightclub performances. Chico had a big band and Harpo recorded two albums of his harp music. Groucho was hosting a game show or doing talk show appearances. Harpo did a lot of those appearances as well later on when he wrote his autobiography. Groucho also wrote books. I mean, they kind of branched out and did different things. They didn't. Groucho had a handful of movie roles, but they never, you know, tried to make a bunch more Marx Brothers movies that people didn't want to see.
In 1969, audio excerpts of dialogue from all five of the Marx Brothers Paramount films were collected and released on an LP album, The Original Voice Tracks from Their Greatest Movies by Decca Records. Dave, can we find that at Wax Trax Records?
I would say probably.
I feel like poor Harpo is really poorly served by that
maybe he did the interstitials, right? Playing the harp or something.
Yeah, it could be, I guess. I don't think that's really something we would necessarily want to see. So Margaret Dumont, of course, the other fixture of these Marx Brothers films, she was in The Big Store, one more Marx Brothers movie after this. She also continued to work in movies and TV. And as you said, worked with both Laurel and Hardy and W.C. Fields, who were our other comedy icon options for this episode. And her final TV appearance just before she died was on a 1965 TV show where she was reunited with Groucho. So, you know, that's nice.
That is nice. I know, you know, when the Marx Brothers were given their honorary Oscar, which Groucho accepted because I think Harpo and Chico had died not too long before and Zeppo was in the audience. Groucho made sure to point out and give love to Margaret Dumont for all of her contributions.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she's pretty essential to this. Edward Buzzell, we didn't mention, he is the director. I mean, the director seems to be like a less important figure in most of these Marx Brothers films. Although,
well,
as
Leo McCrary we had for, you know, Duck Soup, right?
Right, right. I was going to say, I mean, as we mentioned in our love affair, Leo McCrary, a major, major filmmaker, and Duck Soup considered the greatest Marx Brothers movie. Maybe the fact that he directed it is relevant. Edward Buzzell was no Leo McCrary, but he was a journeyman director. He also worked with the Marx Brothers again on Go West and directed the final Thin Man movie, Song of the Thin Man, which was the sixth film. It was also worked in TV. He was a producer on the Milton Berle Show. So, I mean, you know, had a career, but wasn't exactly like a notable filmmaker.
Right. And Irving Bresher, one of the writers here, also did Go West with the Marx Brothers and was one of the uncredited writers on The Wizard of Oz. He also did Shadow of the Thin Man and Bye Bye Birdie, Josh.
So, yeah, but I mean, it seems like, you know, much like, say, Adam Sandler has a stable of directors in his comedies who will just kind of come in and keep things on track and let him do his thing. I would imagine that's the best thing you want for a Marx Brothers film director.
Well, I mean, in a way, is it that different than what Chris McCrary is trying to do with Tom Cruise, right? He knows the formula right now, and they're trying to elevate the formula in each successive film that they're doing. And sometimes it works, and sometimes people don't want to see Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Yeah, I mean, I think with McQuarrie, though, he's got a lot more to do as a director in those movies that are super stunt-driven and visually oriented, whereas with these movies, a lot of it is like point the camera at the Marxes and let them do their thing.
I mean, we talked about that giant trapeze sequence at the end and
right,
the floating, drifting boat. There's always a lot of physical comedy that has to be shot here, too.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I think, again, for something like that, you need just someone who's competent, who knows what they're doing, rather than someone who's going to bring a big artistic vision to the movie.
I thought of Dave when I was researching Groucho Marx because of his appearance in a 1968 film Skidoo by Otto Preminger, Josh, where Jackie Gleason and Carol Channing were the stars, and Groucho played a gangster in there. That sounds very strange to me.
Yeah, Skidoo is one of the most famous failures of all time. It's, if we ever cover that year, that would probably be a good choice for our flop episode. It is famously terrible. And I think I haven't seen it, but one of the things about it is, you know, Otto Preminger, also a big classic Hollywood guy, that people like that and Groucho, it's their very misguided attempt to be like hip with 60s youth culture that fails spectacularly.
Well, Groucho was hip with some other people. He was good friends with Elton John, of all people. He kept calling him John Elton. And the writer Philip Norman said at one point, Marx jokingly pointed his finger like at Elton as if they're a part of like Six Shooters. And Elton John responded, "Don't shoot me, I'm only the piano player," which of course is the name of an Elton John album.
Yeah.
And, you know, a film poster from Go West is visible on the album cover.
Yeah, I mean, we have the Groucho glasses that people wear as like disguises in bits, you know, with the mustache and the big nose and the bushy eyebrows. I mean, Groucho, who lived longer than Harpo and Chico, and because of things like You Bet Your Life and those talk show appearances, became a big influence on pop culture into the 70s. I mean, we can talk about now like Rob Zombie, who names so many of his horror movie characters after Marx Brothers and specifically Groucho Marx characters, you know, Queen naming their albums A Night at the Opera and A Day at the Races. So even things that have nothing to do with comedy or physical comedy or whatever, but the Marx Brothers are so revered by rock stars or whoever that they end up being influential on things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we know the Woody Allen influence. And then, if you watched MASH, which I think we were all too young to watch the TV show MASH, Alan Alda often kind of brought a little Marx Brothers in there. I, of course, did watch all the reruns of Welcome Back, Kotter on Nick at Night. And I remember Gabe Kaplan doing a lot of Groucho there.
I was thinking of that because the gangster in this movie is named Mr. Carter. But every time that Chico says his name, it sounds like Mr. Carter. Mr. Carter.
Yeah,
that's funny. That's good. So
I wondered if that was somehow taken from this.
But if you look at the fans, it's like the people we've mentioned, and then it's like the Beatles, Alice Cooper, George Gershwin, Robert Crumb, Salvador Dali. It's just like they were able to really bring together, you know, people of all different ilks to enjoy their work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, like I said, if I or Dave and I are maybe less appreciative, we're certainly in the minority on that. If we want to give them their due, Kenny Baker and Florence Rice, who played the annoying couple, again, we're not stars really of any note. Kenny Baker was successful on the radio, retired in the early 50s to become a Christian motivational speaker. So that's great. And Florence Rice also retired early on, was in a handful of other films and retired in 1947. So neither of them performers of note, really.
Well, Peerless Pauline, that's the big one.
Yes.
Eve Arden right there, right? You know, so Academy Award nod for Mildred Pierce, who's in The Unfaithful and Anatomy of a Murder, you know, Emmy for Armis Brooks. I don't know that show. And she, of course, was the principal in Grease and Grease, too.
Yeah, I mean, she's had a huge career and she's got a smaller role here, but certainly of those supporting performers, she's the most notable. I did, Jason, want to ask you if you are familiar with Nat Pendleton, who plays the strongman here and was a known professional wrestler in the 1920s.
I looked him up. I had him as an Olympic wrestler. He won the silver medal in the 1920 Olympics, but apparently was robbed. He should have won the gold. So, and he's had an interesting career. He worked with Bela Lugosi and Abbott and Costello, The Thin Man, Dr. Kildare, Great Ziegfeld. You know, he did pretty well for himself.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he was a professional wrestler for a while after his amateur career. So I was wondering maybe if you were familiar with that part of his
career. My knowledge of professional wrestling in the 1920s might be like Carl Gotch or something like that.
I mean, the fact that you can name one professional wrestler from the 1920s is pretty impressive.
I might be able to do another if I really thought about it. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's good. I feel like, you know, when you get to your awesome wrestling year podcast, you can devote an episode to Nat Pendleton.
Well, that'll be after Field of Burns and our other spinoff. What was the other spinoff we just came up with recently, Josh? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It was Dave's Ritz Brothers podcast.
Oh yeah. On the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz. Yeah.
Yeah.
When do you start? That.
We're going to cover all the Ritz Brothers movies.
Hell yeah.
So anything else you want to say about the legacy of this film, Jason?
No, I think we pretty much placed it where we all feel it deserves to be in the Marx Brothers pantheon based on our limited knowledge.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So that is At the Circus. And that is this episode of Awesome Movie Year. You can find our circus online and on social media.
We're at awesomemovieyear.com, Awesome Movie Year on Facebook and Instagram, Awesome Movie Pod on. Josh doesn't like me calling it abortion, so I'll call it back alley abortion today. I'm Jason Harris, comedy on all the things, Jay Harris, comedy on all the things. And go for Jason on Letterboxd. Make sure you tag the Awesome Movie Year on the Letterboxd.
Yes, we appreciate that. If you're on Letterboxd and you review a film that we talk about, put the Awesome Movie Year tag on there and we can check out your reviews. We'd love to hear what you have to say. You can find some old stuff from me at joshbellhateseverything.com. I am at joshbellhateseverything on Facebook, at signalbleed on Twitter or X or other things that Jason might want to call it, as well as at signalbleed on Blue Sky and on Letterboxd. And you can listen to our producer, David Rosen's awesome podcast, Piecing It Together.
Check out Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod.
Jason, what's in our next episode?
The epilogue.
The epilogue. That is right. We are going to wrap up our 1939 season with an epilogue and take a look back at the whole season. So tune in next time for that. And thanks for listening to Awesome Movie Year.
Thank you for listening to Awesome Movie Year. Make sure to follow Awesome Movie Year on Facebook, at Awesome Movie Pod on Twitter, and at Awesome Movie Year on Instagram. And if you like the show, review us and rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.